Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could join me this morning. For the last couple of weeks, I've talked about the fact that I'd like to do a show about adoptees, adults that were adopted at an early age and grew up with foster parents in foster families, and the different points of view that they all have now that they're adults. I found some kind of good stories and some good points of view, but one of the things that I found that, I don't know why it shocked me, because every time I look up something, I realize that there's so much information out there. There's all kinds of sites that that will help you find your birth parents. And I read a lot of stories, and there's some good ones. There's some, I would call them happy ones. Sometimes they were kind of sad. But then there were some that just, they met and was like, oh, okay. But I think the biggest thing that a lot of people convince themselves is the reason they want to know is for medical reasons. You get in your 40s and you start to realize that you're having health issues. And one of the stories that I'm going to talk about today, this young man thought it was amusing when he went into a doctor's office for the first time, a new doctor. And, of course, half the questionnaire is about your heritage. You know, do you have any members in your family that had this or that had that? Is there heart problems in your family? Is there cancer in your families? And he kind of would smile to himself and think, you know, I have no idea. So that, in a lot of cases, was the driving force. And most all the stories I read were happy stories in regard to the foster home and to the new parents that were happy to adopt these young children and raise them as their own. I didn't find any of the horrible, evil stepmom and stepdad stories, which I was pleased about. But it is stuff, you know, the stuff that we talk about that we all have. This is something that probably looms outside of your head all the time. Now, I'm just making that assumption. I've always felt that there must be some questions in the minds of a child, in the minds of children, that wonders why their real parents, their birth parents, gave them away. And in some cases, there were very good reasons. In some cases, there weren't very good reasons. But ultimately, I think if a parent has to give away their child, they think that they're doing the right thing. I don't think it's something that somebody would do without believing that it was the best thing for the child. So let's bring Shelley in so that I can share some of these stories, because some of them are quite interesting. Good morning, Shelley. How are you?
Doing very well. Good morning, Rainey. And how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm okay. Another day in paradise, right? While all the rest of the world is struggling with 15-degree weather and snow already and everything, here we are in paradise. Every time I open up Facebook, somebody's got a picture of the rest of the United States being way below average temperatures and Florida being way above. So I'm getting a little bit of hate mail from relatives up north, you know.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people in Florida, you know, we end up taking our weather for granted a lot of times. And, you know, for people like you and I that actually, you know, grew up somewhere else. Well, I mean, you were down here for a while, but you lived a lot of time up in Ithaca. And I lived out on Long Island, New York, which is, because it's all surrounded by water, would be frigid in the wintertime. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So for us, it is. Now, unique to be down, and here it is, the Christmas season upon us. It's after Thanksgiving, And we're still walking around in T-shirts and shorts.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, like. And swimming and, you know, all of the above. It is, well, and of course, because I was just there,
right.
It's very clear to me the difference. I mean, you know, it's very, very clear to me. The other thing that my brother and my sister and I talked about was the effort that goes in to staying warm. The clothes that you have to wear, the layers, the socks.
I remember that, boy.
The mittens, the scarf, the hat. I mean, you know, and then if you're outside and it's snowing and blowing and you wear glasses. I didn't wear glasses when I moved to Florida. And I was like, okay, so where's the guy with the little windshield wipers that you're supposed to have installed on your glasses? Because it's impossible to walk. You literally can't see within the matter of seconds. So all those things, and I look at, you know, my family that still lives up there, and I say, are you out of your mind? And they say, we're just used to it, Aunt Rainey, just used to it. That's all it's about.
Yeah, I never got used to it after I was, like, in my 40s when I moved down here, and I never got used to it, you know. So it's I've always felt very blessed that we finally moved to a warm state.
Okay, so this morning I found some really nice stories, but I did find this article from somebody who interviewed adoptees and did a little bit of research on his own. So I want to read that first because I was, like I said, I was kind of amazed, even though I realize now from all the research I've done the past year, how much information is out there. It's kind of amazing the kind of things you can type into Google and actually things come up, lots of things come up, no matter what you type in. So this was interesting, and it was interesting to see how many different organizations, companies, et cetera, that will give, you know, information as to how. Instead of, you know, like probably years ago, you had to hire a PI. And one of the stories talked about that, about how PIs would research and, you know, footwork pretty much, you know, to find birth parents. And now it's really available fairly easy. So this is my first outline as to how different methods will work for different people. Beginning an adoption reunion search can be the start to an emotionally difficult yet rewarding journey. The first step is the biggest step you'll take. Deciding to begin your search and reunion journey commonly requires dedication, perseverance, and emotional and mental fortitude. I am so sure that is truer than true. I mean, because you never know what you're going to find out, right? I mean, think about it. You just really never know what you're going to find out. Some of those who search find who they're looking for right away, while others can search for years without success. Unfortunately, there isn't a way to know which category you'll fall into before you begin the process. However, even if success isn't met right away, the journey holds a lot of other benefits and advantages, including a better understanding of yourself and your life experiences. Once you've decided to start your search, you will then have to decide how you're going to move forward. For starters, it's possible that the agency used to facilitate the adoption offers post-adoption services that include a registry or third-party intermediary who will attempt to locate and contact the member of the triad that you are looking for. You can also search online directories that aren't related to a specific agency. Many of these online directories are free, including the adoption.com reunion registry. Because of the modern and popular use of social networking sites, that's a great place to start too. Of course, these methods will only work if you have already have some identifying information about that person. You could also use the expertise of professional searchers who do cost money, or search angels who are free to work with. I didn't know until I researched that there is an organization called Search Angels who will help young people.
Wow.
There, Yeah, that's kind of neat. There are so many different ways to start and continue your reunion search, but you don't have to choose only one method. Why not try them all? Often, services available through agencies or professional searchers do cost money, as mentioned above. So it is important to research the services you are investigating before taking that first step. Becoming active in online adoption communities will allow you to speak to others who may have used the services you are considering, or it may lead you to a whole different direction altogether. However, it may be best to start with the free resources before moving into the paid ones. Once you've started your search, you'll want to begin the preparation for a possible reunion. It's important to keep your expectations of the relationship low and take things one step at a time. I would say those are major words of wisdom. This is because you don't want to get your hopes up, have the reunion fail in some way, or become devastated. Keeping expectations low or expectations open and pliable means that you can get back up and keep trying until you're happy with the results. It's easy to get caught up in the moment and leap forward while emotions are high. However, taking time to ease into the relationship and build a strong foundation is important in the very first stages. Try to keep communication light and easy until you've gotten to know the person a little better. Once you've gotten to know your adopted child or birth parent, you can then start to address the emotional topics, which will inevitably come up. The reunion journey is an exciting one, even with all the bumps and hurdles along the way. Remember that every journey will be different, so try not to compare your reunion journey with others. Focus on your goal and your progression, and you'll soon be able to reconnect and reunite. Now, like I said, this particular report was made by somebody who researched this. I guess he doesn't say that he is an adoptee and that he did this to help. He just says he did it because he thought it would help others. And as usual, in some of the reports that I find, there's a lot of feedback, and I'm not going to read them all because they're all different, but most of them, there's probably like 15 that I pulled up on this site, and almost all of them are positive and have relatively happy endings. And some are kind of non-consequential. I mean, they meet, hi, how are you? You know, they don't really get to any of the deep-seated things that you would think that they'd want to ask right away. They just look at each other and make a decision as to whether or not they have anything in common and walk away, which I also found to be kind of interesting. So the next one that I found that I thought was interesting is it's called The Real Parents Question to Stop Asking Adopted Kids. Now, this is from a young person who wrote this in an effort to help the foster family, I think. That seems to be, what it's pointed at. And this particular article, it's from the HuffPost, and it's about parents. And it is the 11th post in an article or articles that was titled 30 Adoption Portraits in 30 Days, a series designed to give a voice to people with widely varying experiences, including birth parents, adoptees, adoptive parents, foster parents, waiting adoptive parents, and others touched by adoption. And then in very bold print, it says, "Stop asking adopted kids if we want to find our real parents." And it's written by a young woman named Mariana for a book that was called Portrait of an Adoption. Everyone looks at a photo of our family and says we look like a Benetton ad. All of my siblings, including myself, were each born on a different continent: Asia, Europe, North America, and South America. My sister was born in Thailand. I was born in Chile. My oldest sister in England and my brother in Michigan. We were one of the only families in our school with adopted kids. My older sister wasn't adopted, and my little brother wasn't either, just me and my other older sister. Now, it's cool to be adopted. I tell people my parents were the original Brangelina, picking up kids from random countries and giving us a better life, as they did. I think that adopted kids should have a secret handshake or one of those cool rings like the Green Lantern, so that we know who's adopted and who's not. Because unlike non-adopted kids, our parents actually did choose us. Also, we know we are adopted. Even if our parents didn't tell us, I'd hope that we were smart enough to see that me, being 5'3", with dark hair, and my mom being 5'10", with blonde hair, that something was up. People who are adopted usually know that they're adopted. So stop acting like it's some after-school special secret. I just love this article. This is a young girl. Speaking of which, I hate that in the 80s, TV shows made people totally weird about adopted kids. We are not all like Webster or Different Strokes. Or there's always that dumb episode in every sitcom where a minor character finds out he or she was adopted at age 18, of course, and then goes and finds their birth parents, as in Skippy from Family Ties or Steve Sanders on Beverly Hills 90210. And I'm pretty sure that there have to have been a very special episode on Saved by the Bell. I wish TV and films would stop doing that. I love Wes Anderson to death, but when he made the two main characters in the Royal Tannenbaums fall in love and it was supposedly okay because Margot was adopted, I was sick to my stomach. What I want people to know is that we aren't any different from you. My siblings are just that, my siblings. I don't think of them as anything else. The only real difference between adopted kids and non-adopted kids are the following things. Feeling pretty punk rock that when I go to the doctor, it takes me half the time it takes other people to fill out those forms, because for part of the family history, I simply write adopted across the top. Time saver for sure. In science class in sixth grade, when you get to the DNA part and you figure out the breakdown of your father's DNA and your mom's and why you are who you are, you just sit that one out. Maybe read quietly or sit outside in the hall. You have nobody that looks like you. Having people think your 6'6" blonde brother is your boyfriend, gross. I will usually loudly say, hey, mom called. You've got to call our mom back. If there's a cute guy at the table near us so he knows, that's her brother. What bothers me about people who find out I'm adopted is that they always have the most typical response. Do you want to find your real mom? Are you serious? My real mom is an accomplished author and teacher. That's my mom. There's no such thing as a real mom and a fake mom. Sure, there's my birth mom, but I don't even care or think about her. She did a very selfless thing to give me up, so why would I want to bug her? That's incredibly selfish of me. My dad, he's British and is an architect and is one of the nicest people ever and is one of the hardest working people I've ever met. Those are my real parents. So when you ask me if I want to find my real parents, I simply tell you they live in Michigan. My view is a controversial one. I don't think adopted kids should seek out their birth parents. It's selfish. It's rude. You're going to break her heart just because you are curious? It would not only break my real parents' hearts, but who knows what kind of life she has gone on to lead. Sometimes birth moms have moved on and have entire families of their own who never knew about the baby they gave up. Please, people, stop asking adopted kids if they want to find their parents. You've been asking me that my entire life. Are you serious? I'd be dead of starvation or poor on the streets of Santiago if it weren't for my parents. I have the best life and the best family anyone could ever ask for. I got so incredibly lucky. Kids are who adopted got the best thing of all. They got unconditional love from people who chose to have more kids because they had so much love to give. I always tell people, sure, your mom gave you life, but my mom gave me a life. Isn't that wonderful?
Wow, it really is.
I read that like three times last night and thought to myself, now this is really, really a special story. And this is, you know, it made the most sense to me. For me, it's true. Everything she said is true and down to earth, and some major good points. I mean, it is selfish to want to know. But some people are going to look at you and say, why shouldn't I be selfish then? You know, why don't I have the right to know that? Well, we've talked about rights on the show, and we've talked about what our rights are and what our rights mean. And sometimes, even if they are your rights, they're not right. It's not okay, in other words. So
well, I kind of have mixed emotions on that. I love her story because I think it's very empowering. I think there's probably a lot of other adopted kids that feel that way. And I think it's a very healthy attitude to have. I don't think there's anything not okay with wanting to find your birth parents either. And there could be a lot of reasons for that that I don't think are selfish. It has to do with identity, somebody wanting to know if they have other siblings out there, especially when you have a multiracial family and you're black being brought up by white parents or you're white being brought up by black parents. I mean, I'm assuming it could go either way. You know, and you want to have a little bit more tie to your own heritage. You know, it has nothing to do with not appreciating the adoptive parents. But if it's handled in a way where you have no expectations, and I think this is the key, if the adopted child, who is now an adult, tries to find their parents with the expectation that unless they know why they were given up, okay, that the parent may not want to be found, that this may be a traumatic event for the parent, they have to be prepared for that, and if that's the case, they have to be able to leave the parents in an okay place. Say, look, I know you didn't want me to find you. I just want to let you know that I'm glad I did find you, and I hope you have a happy life and walk away. And if they can handle it that way, it might actually be healing for both of them. Meet, exit, and then go on about your lives. But if they go into it with expectations that there's going to be some sort of a major reuniting or something like that, they could be setting themselves up for a big heartache, and they could be, like you said, affecting somebody else's life. So I think the motive and how they go into searching for the birth parent is going to have a lot to do with the outcome. And sometimes birth parents want to be found. I mean, I've heard stories of birth parents, especially mothers, more so, but I've heard it from the father's side also, that really didn't want to give their children up but were in a position, financial or otherwise, where they had no choice, and they gave the child up to give the child a better chance for a happy life, but were haunted. You know, they went on to get married and have other children, and this one child they gave up haunted them their whole lives. So sometimes that reuniting is a very healing process. And then the adopted child gets to reunite with other siblings that they have, and now they have a more extended family. You know, as long as they still stay connected to the family that they grew up with, which is just as much a family as their birth parents, you know, it can actually give the adopted person a fuller range of love to draw from. You know, the family they grew up with and the family that they met later in years, you know. And again, I've heard of some of those stories that were very successful, and they just blended into a new future that had more people that loved them in it. But again, if this is something you're going to do, you have to go into it without expectations. You have to go into it completely prepared for any scenario to play out and being okay with whatever scenario plays out.
And that's exactly right. And of course, you're right about the other fact, which was, you know, sometimes it's the parents, it's the birth parents that are in search of the children that they gave up for adoption. It's about them wanting to know if they're okay and if they're happy and if they made the right decision. And in order for them to have a more balanced life on their own, and like you said, one of the stories I read, a young person found out that their mom was a teenager, and it was way back in the day, you know, it wasn't recently, and she gave up the baby for adoption, and the boyfriend was another teenager. They were in high school, and they ended up getting married. And so the psychological a scenario like that where they actually grow past the 14, 15, 16 time and become adults and get married and have other children, but there's still that children that they're both the natural parents of that they gave away. I can imagine that scenario of all that I read would probably be the most difficult to live with or the most have the most long-reaching tentacles, so to speak, because it you know, I mean, you can analyze it when you become an adult, when you do something like that when you're 15 and say, well, you know, I don't even remember that boy that much, and you know, we never saw each other again and stuff like that. Those things seem more workable to me for the emotional status of that young woman. But the one story that I read, like I said, where they get through high school and they end up getting married and having other children, they were in search of their birth child. And I certainly understood that. But even, you know, like I have some, Kathy writes this, and she says, I'm looking for a needle in the haystack. My father and his nephew were just a few years apart in age and grew up more like brothers. Shortly before my father died in 2010, he told me he had received a call from a woman in Ohio who had given birth to a child and that my father said belonged to his nephew. Now, this gets kind of confusing. He said that she had married and moved to Ohio and the child was raised by her husband. But as my father sat there, knowing he was dying, he began to sob. He didn't know what to do. Said he didn't want to destroy everyone's lives now. I was really taken back by his emotions concerning this child. I have to wonder if this might have been my father's child and not his nephew's. Either way, I'm the only one he mentioned this to, and I'm the only key to someone finding their father. He gave me no name, nothing else. If this story sounds familiar to anyone, would you please contact me? Wow. Not sure if I'm doing the right thing, but cannot get this off my mind. So there's a lot of stories like that as well, you know, where another member of the family finds out something like this, and often it's at the end of someone's life, and it's been like in their head and their heart for their whole life, and they've never shared it with anybody. I can't even imagine that. I'm too much of an open book. I have to tell somebody. I mean, that's a big secret to keep for your whole life, right?
Really is.
But it's also, I found a lot of siblings who find out that they were adopted. They're very happy with their new family. There's no problems there. But they find out that when they were adopted, they were in a some kind of a orphanage or something, whatever they called it, and they had siblings. And then they go in search of those siblings. And I can imagine doing that, and I can imagine that being a less complicated reunion than finding your child or finding your parents. It just seems to me that siblings aren't going to harbor any resentment, you know, to one another. They're going to be able to lay the blame on somebody else so their relationship can start without any kind of emotional trauma like that. So I think I would always, if only once in all the people I've talked to, did somebody ask me if I thought they should try to find their brother. And I said, absolutely. Why wouldn't you want to? I mean, if you have the time, the energy, in some cases the finances, go ahead. I mean, you have somebody that is of your blood out there that you've never laid eyes on, I'd want to see them too. But the birth parents are another story. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Would you look, Shelley?
It's hard to say because, you know, because I'm not there, so it's hard to imagine. I think because of the type of person I am, I would be curious, and because I mean, I have such a love for people, and, you know, the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I like having a lot of friends. I have only a few close friends, but I have a lot of friends, and it feels good to me to have a large circle of people that I'm connected with. Whether it be close relationships or not. So I think because of my personality, I would want to know if there was an extended family that I could become part of, but I'm also a very loyal person, so it would not affect in any way my existing relationship with my adopted family because I would have, just like the letter that girl wrote, I would feel the same way except for the fact that I would have a draw to see if I had an extended family out there somewhere. It wouldn't diminish my love or my loyalty towards my existing family that I grew up with and that, as she put it, gave me a life, you know. I wouldn't want to damage that in any way. But I think, for me, I would want to pursue it. But also because of who I am, I would go into it the way I was talking. I would go into it without any expectations. And whatever surfaced, then I would either walk away from it or become have a larger circle of love in my life, you know, depending on what I found and what the attitudes of the people I found were.
Well, and that's pretty open-minded, and I guess I would agree with that. I think I would be curious myself. I think that I would want a couple of answers, but because I am who I am, it would be very emotional for me. Because,
oh, yeah.
Like we've talked about before, having your feelings hurt, which of course would be the ultimate, feelings of not being loved or important enough. I mean, you can always look at the other side of it once you become old enough to analyze it. But like the who wrote the first story, she obviously was very emotionally healthy.
Yeah.
And felt very strongly about who she belonged to and who she was a part of, which is awesome. I know birth kids that don't get that. I mean, I know who are so totally disconnected as far as each other is concerned, it like blows me away. So I think it has a lot to do with your emotional wellness. I think it has a lot to do with how everybody has talked to you about your story, your truth through all those years. And obviously the parents of that young woman had all the right words and shared the right stories and all the right sentiments, which of course is a blessing in itself. And I don't think that everybody is capable or graced with that kind of diplomacy and that kind of tact when they talk about those kind of emotional things, which is sad, but very true. So
let me read. Let me make one quick comment. I apologize for interrupting, but one of the things you just said about it could actually be traumatic if you find the birth parent and they want nothing to do with you, and you find they gave you up for reasons that were very selfish and uncaring and things like that. That's why unless you do have a very, very strong personality, I have a very strong personality, so I would be able to go into it with that scenario as a possibility and already have adjusted with it. But there are some people that would be absolutely devastated if they were faced with the reality of that. And so you have to make sure that, number one, you're old enough. I don't know that a teenager should seek out their parents in case that's what they find, because I think teenagers are too vulnerable emotionally. Their emotions are kind of all over the place. And also, you should do your own check. Make sure that you have kind of gone through that emotional workout, so to speak, to make sure that you truly could handle finding out something negative, that you have some sort of an emotional set point to fall back on and keep yourself in a good place.
Well, I would say that was totally and completely on the mark. And, of course, that's the issue. The issue is, well, like the first article that I read was all about being prepared, to set your hopes and your expectations very low. And if it turns out to be wonderful, then you're good. If it turns out to be awful, then you're at least weren't expecting something, like from the movies or from you have in your mind,
Right.
A beautiful story about sending a child away that I loved as a child was Heidi. Remember, Heidi's mother, for whatever reasons, took her to live with her very stern father, that Heidi was his grandchild, and they lived way up in the mountains, and in the beginning he barely spoke to her and everything, and of course they became incredibly close to each other and cared about each other very deeply in the story. But I remember as a little girl watching Heidi, and I was so angry with the mom, thinking to myself, well, if you grew up with that mean old man, why would you take your little girl to live with him? I mean, what's the deal here? And he accepted her, but in the beginning, you've seen Heidi, right, honey? You watched Heidi when you were a kid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I also read the book.
Mm-hmm. I did, too.
Young.
And the book is even more, of course, then you get to use your own imagination. But I never forgot that story. And, of course, it was a happy ending, as fairy tales used to be. And, they became, very, very close and loved each other. But in the beginning, and again, the first time I watched it, I was a little girl. And I could not believe a mom could do that. And I would even analyze, well, maybe she didn't know that he was going to be so mean to her. But then I'd think, well, if she lived with him and left him up there on top of that mountain, she must have known what a mean old ogre he was. And so it was very upsetting for me, that movie, as a child. And, of course, as I grew and saw it again and had my kids watch it and everything, it didn't bother me as much. I was always glad that I watched it again when I was older, too, by the way, to change the feelings I had about that kind of a scenario in my own head. I think we do that with a lot of things,
Yeah, it is interesting that you say that, but there's movies that I grew up on that I've watched it as an adult. And we do change, because I find that my responses to certain scenes that I remembered are very different now as an adult. You just have a slightly different take on life. And so it is good to readdress those types of movies and see how you have evolved.
Mm-hmm. I think it is good, too. I think that, I also got a little bit of a amusement. I don't know if you caught it, but the young woman that just did the remake of the Julie Andrews movie, and she did it live on television.
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it, but I saw the commercial. I know what you're talking about.
The Sound of Music. And,
right.
And she's, she's Carrie Underwood, right? Isn't that her name?
Carrie
yes. Underwood.
Yeah.
And her voice, of course, is magnificent, and of course, you know, when you step into the shoes of somebody who has been proclaimed as almost iconic and you know, one of a kind and everything, those are tough shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. And she actually had some bad feedback. And her answer on Twitter was, you know, the person who wrote this needs God. I will pray for them. And which I thought, you know, was, well, I mean, her words were a little bit different than that, but that was the essence of it. And now they're going to do, you know, instead of live, they're going to show it again, I guess, next Sunday for the holidays. And they're
also Carrie Underwood, one of the American Idol winners? What, didn't she win like years ago? I think that's how she got her start.
That could be. I don't remember. I just thought that she started as a country music singer, but I could be wrong. I'm still stuck in the 60s, you know me. So
yeah, and I'm pretty sure she was one of the American I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that that's how she got her her claim to fame. I think she was already a singer beforehand. I think she's been singing since she was a little kid. But she did, I'm pretty sure she went on that competition and she won. And that's how she kind of like rose to national stardom so fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's absolutely beautiful. And she did, I mean, and her voice is, you know, perfect. And
yeah, no, she's got an incredible voice.
Little bits and pieces of it, and it was beautiful. But, you know, there's always somebody who, you know, gets jealous, you know. They get, they see somebody young like her who dared to do that, to step into those shoes. I mean, that would be, that's like the little girl. Remember the little gymnast who did her live version of Peter Pan after Mary Martin did it? Way, way back in the 50s or whenever it was that Mary Martin did the live on Broadway Peter Pan. Do you remember that?
Yes, actually I do.
And then they made the movie of it, and she stepped into it. She was adorable as well, but she got some, you know, she got some nasty feedback because everybody thought Mary Martin did it better.
I understand that. I mean, that's like the greatest form of flattery when somebody imitates you, and it's like, you know, when you have somebody remake something that you did, that means that it was so loved that somebody wanted to recreate it. I mean, that's flattering. So, you know, find something. I don't know. I've never understood why people get so upset over remakes, unless the remake was done in a very shabby or disrespectful way. But for the most part, I've never seen remakes like that. I think most remakes are done very well. Some of the remakes don't really hold up to the original, but some remakes stand on their own, and they're just as enjoyable with some minor changes that actually give it kind of a new twist, and now you can appreciate both of them. But I think it's complementary to the original piece of work.
Oh, I do too. I do too. And, but again, you know, there are some just, let's face it, we have a beautiful world. We have trees and sky and oceans and mountains and sandy deserts. We have everything anybody could ask for, and we've still got people out there who feel mean and angry and can't be happy about anything. So
right,
we know that.
Right.
That there are those out there that just can't even get out of their own way, and it's a shame, but
yeah,
it's
it
true.
Is.
So let me read this last
energy.
We've got some, that's what this guy says.
What did he say?
I said, let me read this last, this is a Psychology Today report, and
uh-huh.
And this man is a psychologist, and he was adopted. So he writes a little, it's very short, but I think it's warm and friendly, and I also think it's honest. I can't speak for all adult adoptees, but I can say, after interviewing several of them over the years, that many of us have trouble feeling completely comfortable wherever we are, no matter how welcomed we may be. At times, our discomfort can manifest in distancing, indifference, or even rudeness. But we usually don't intend to insult anybody. We just seem to have an internalized nomadic notion that we don't belong anywhere in particular. Even when we do settle somewhere, we often work our asses off to prove our worthiness. Just in case anyone gets any ideas about putting us back up for adoption. I can understand that, and that makes a very valid point.
Right.
While watching my oldest daughter play at a neighborhood park, I thought to myself, wow, she looks just like me. What a miracle. Well, to me, it was a miracle. It was thrilling and heartwarming, but it was also a little strange. I almost cried. For the next several months, I had to work on emotionally claiming her as my own. Some of us who were adopted in closed states, or states that don't allow for the free exchange of even the most vital information, such as a health history, have a lingering fear that we might drop dead at any moment. I just love filling out the medical history questionnaire at a new doctor's office, the one that asks what diseases your parents suffered from. How about the question, what age was your father when he died? How should I know? The great state of so-and-so won't tell me. Not knowing one's history is especially annoying to those of us adoptees who have biological children. What am I passing on? Will I be around for the weddings? By the time I hit my 40s, I was tired of the intrigue. My adopted parents were deceased, and I felt it was time to explore what I came to see as a whole in my life. The research indicates that many adopted children feel this way and may embark on a biological search even if they've had a positive experience with their adopted parents. I also wanted to explore the fantasy that my biological father was Al Pacino and my mother was Candace Bergen. Don't laugh. Went to Penn. The search process, as it is affectionately known, was not for the faint of heart, but it was fascinating. By calling a few favors and hiring a private investigator, I was able to have Bio Mom tracked down within a few days. Apparently, PIs, private investigators, don't just sit in cars with Zoom lens. They now use powerful computers to find people. Initially, Bio Mom was reluctant to speak with me. The PI said she was afraid that I was looking for money. But after convincing her that I was more interested in my medical chart than her portfolio, Bio Mom allowed me to charm her. No, Bio Mom wasn't Candace Bergen, and she assured me Pacino wasn't Pop. But she jokingly told me that as long as I continued to exercise and consume my share of bran muffins, I would have a better than even chance of dancing at my daughter's weddings. I also discovered that Bio Mom had some significant attachment issues. Go figure. She told me that she was ashamed of putting me up for adoption. Apparently, Bio Dad, deceased by this time, was less than thrilled about being a father at 50. But I got a stronger sense that these two antiseptic, orderly people were thrown off course by the emergent threat of yours truly and headed for the hills. By the way, Bio parents actually had me, put me up for adoption, and then married. More often than not, a pregnant teenager is the Bio Mom and the father is some long-lost guy she barely remembers. Bio Mom and I continued our telephone relationship for the next several years, but sadly enough, it just plain wore out. I got tired of playing in a fixed pursuer distancer dance, and so I did what a lot of adopted kids might do in a situation like this. I disappeared. I took my medical history and a few more tidbits, and I faded with a new appreciation for my adopted parents. They weren't perfect, but neither was I. As for Bio Mom, I hope she lives forever. She wasn't a bad sort, and my kids could sure use the good genes. Great story, huh?
Yeah, well, I got a couple of things from that, and I do think that's a great story, and I think that that might have been one of the things that even kind of inspired him to become a psychologist. But one of the things is that as far as the medical history is concerned, I feel very strongly about this just based on the research I'm doing and a lot of what we saw at Hippocrates and based on my own personal experience. Cancer and diabetes is literally rampant in my family, on both sides, by the way. More cancer on my father's side, some cancer on my mom's side, but a lot of diabetes on my mom's side. But I'm talking about debilitating diabetes. And I don't have either. My sister doesn't. None of the grandchildren are having any issues with regard to diabetes. And then you have a lot of childhood diabetes nowadays. And my mom, who's in her late 70s, doesn't have diabetes. And she's a little heavyset woman, but when she had her blood work done a couple of years ago, we had to take her to the emergency because she injured her foot in the front yard. They were shocked by my mom's blood work. Meanwhile, her sister has life-threatening diabetes, and there's cancer on my mom's side of the family. And the reason is that my mom changed her lifestyle going back about 15 years ago. She had had what was called a mini stroke, and my sister and I put her on a what was called a cleaner diet. And, you know, at that time, she did become vegetarian with us, and it made a world of difference. So she's still a little heavyset because she likes her pastas and stuff like that. But she really does eat a very, very clean diet. She drinks water. She doesn't drink soda and stuff like that. So heredity is good to know what your predisposed weaknesses are. So that's why sometimes it can be difficult for an adopted child to know what their history is. But I disagree with the medical community that it's that much help, because if you do live a lifestyle, if you take responsibility for your health issues and you start searching out things that alkalize the body and start cutting out some of the things that acidify the body, you're going to sidestep these health issues anyway. It's not a given just because it's a predisposed weakness, just because it's the path your body will go if you don't take responsibility for how you eat and how you think and things like that, then your family history is kind of mirroring what's going to happen to you. But if you take a different path, I took a different path, my sister did, my mom did. Now, my dad has already gone through cancer 3 times. He never changed his lifestyle. It's rampant on his side of the family, and my own father has experienced it 3 times. My grandfather on his side died of brain cancer. But my sister and I have absolutely zero worries. Same thing with my mom. My mom's in her late 70s, and she's not going to have the same illnesses that befell most of her relatives, including both her sisters, because her lifestyle is different. So that's a very important point to make, that you doesn't matter what your heredity lines say, you can stay off diseases by having a better lifestyle and making better choices. So that was one thing, because I know that that's a big, big deal, especially with adopted people. You know, but it's not an indicator of what is going to happen to them. It's just what may happen to them if they don't live a good lifestyle. And the other thing is, with regard to the siblings, you were saying that usually the siblings would be like really probably would not have any issues about needing a sibling. I believe that's the case unless there's money involved, and that's another thing that came out in his article. If the birth parents are very wealthy people, and they may or not have been when they gave up the child, but if they're wealthy now and there's other siblings involved, there may be some resentment that this person is coming out of the woodwork all of a sudden because the parents have money now. So that's the issue. If you're searching for siblings and you find out that the parents had any kind of an estate or money, then you really have to kind of tread lightly and make sure that it's very clear from the get-go that that's not why you're there. Otherwise, you can be seen as very suspicious, and you're going to be met with resistance and not welcomed with open arms, so to speak.
Well, and we see that a lot in the world of movie stars and, very out there in the media kind of people. I say that is... even after, or more often than not, after someone passes, all of a sudden, he was my dad, but I never told anybody, that kind of a deal. So I think that's bit different, and I can see where that would, you know, everybody would be, I don't know, suspicious for sure, and not want to just open their arms to somebody like that. But I think, I mean, I remember a show years ago, it might have even been Oprah, back when it wasn't just about whose baby is it, it was really about human interest stories. And she did a show, and I think Sally Jesse Raphael did a show about siblings that found each other, and in some cases they were twins. And of course, the twins, there's a lot of talk about how connected twins are. Did you see the picture that was on the news a couple weeks ago of the twins that were born that wouldn't let go of each other? Did you see that? It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. They embraced each other after they were born, just embraced each other. Oh. And I think that that's the way they grew in the womb. And, I mean, it was beautiful. It should be, that picture should be taken and enlarged and shown to everybody that that's the way we're supposed to feel all the time. But it was gorgeous. I mean, almost made me feel so beautiful. And I said to whoever I was watching it with, you know, no wonder twins feel so connected. I've never seen anything like that, but this can't be the first time twins were born like that. Or immediately, you know, they laid them beside each other and they just turned to each other and embraced each other. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I think I have seen pictures like that of twins before. I believe you're right. I think it's just such a natural thing for them because they grew up all those months in the mom's womb. It's comforting and familiar to them, and it's just a natural state for them to want to have the touch of the other one.
Mm-hmm. Well, like puppies. You know, you take away a puppy from mom is bad enough, but you can feed them and pet them and hold them and everything, but they really miss their brothers and sisters when you take a puppy away from a litter of pups.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just, both of my sons this week, Mike and Val's little Molly gave birth to four puppies again. Only three survived. Molly is very tiny. But then my son's German Shepherd, Katie had 10 puppies, and they only have four left. And the other six, I may have the numbers wrong, but I think the other six were just so tiny. This was her first litter of pups. And so, of course, David and Carol were very upset about it, but he called me in New York, and he said, Mom, Katie keeps laying on the runt. And I said, she's trying to decide who is strong enough to survive, and she'll know that instinctively. And animals do that. But again, the puppies cling to each other no matter what. So it is interesting. But
yeah.
We're almost out of time, but I do want to say that I think that what you just said about know, taking better care of yourself if you think there's any chance. And, of course, at a very early age, I think things that are going to be with you are detected at a very early age. So I think in most cases you're safe. Heart disease and things like that that happen to you when you're older are usually inflicted by yourself. Even if there is that in your family, like Shelley just said, it's still self-inflicted. So take better care of yourself if you have those worries. I think that that's great words of wisdom. I want to thank everybody today and send you out. Have a great, great day. I think the highs are going to be just about 80, but it's supposed to be balmy and beautiful today. And for those of you who are keeping track, my sister is still with us, and I'm just blown away by that, but she has the constitution of somebody that's my size, and she's not. So her inner core has always been a very big person, even though she was physically tiny.
And her inner core probably got a little bit of a boost with the with the visit from her siblings. I'm sure that that recharged her a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely. Well, you could see that while we were there. Yeah, that's for sure. Matter of fact, my niece couldn't believe how animated she was when we walked in after days of her being so sedate and just sleeping. She was like grinning at all of us and writing things to me and asking how Spike was, and you know, so it was great. So everybody go out there and have a great day. Thanks, Shell. I am going to call you in a few minutes. Are you going to be available?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody. God bless.
All right. Bye, hon. Talk to you soon. Have a wonderful day, everyone.